You broke the rule. I said before that usually after a holiday there's a dip in the learning. So not too much of a dip today.
Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem.
So we continue in the Rambam Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Chafav, Halacha Tes, Chapter 26, Law 9, in the Maznaim text on page 268 and 269. We are learning the laws of Muktzah, things that we're not allowed to touch on, move on Shabbos for various reasons. And we ended off last week discussing things that are used, if they can be used as doors or not. Something had a hinge and it came off of the hinge, and how's it connected back? So we're going to have a continuation, one more halacha of that, maybe two more halachas of that rather. And then we move on to a number of other muktzah issues for the next halachas. Remember, chafav is the last perek on muktzah. Then we move on to tchum for one perek. Okay, tes. Deles shahoya lo luach echad. A door, but not a conventional door. A door that seems to have just one board. Okay? In other words, it's not a full door, like a normal door, but it has one beam, and you really couldn't tell it's a door. The guy's planning to use it as a door, but it's not your conventional door. It could look just as much as a slab of wood.
It's a plywood.
How, that you place it and you close it. So, you know, I think we did this one. We did do tests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did do tests. We're on Yud. But you know, let's do it again. Let's do it again quickly because we need the context. So, im lo hayolamata kan kamo as kupa, if it doesn't have a door stop at the bottom of the wood, shemochich aleh shehi kli muchen lanila, that proves to us that it is utensil prepared for closing. So you don't have that, then ain't no limbo. You can't close with it because it really isn't functioning so much as a closing door, but rather it looked like you're plugging up the hole. Remember, the question is it looking and functioning like a door, or does it look like you're finishing the wall?
Is that a completing issue?
Right? Then that would be binyan, that would be building. Opening and closing a door, you're allowed to do on Shabbos. That's not considered building because it's
but
part
if you
of
used it like that all week. You couldn't. Then,
right? Well, it's not clear. What does it really look like? If it doesn't look like a functioning door, even if you're using it as a functioning door, it could look more like you're building with it. So it has to have this door stop at the bottom, then you can use it. V'miyesh lamata askupa. If you do have this door stop at the bottom, no, but you can close it. Now, the next issue about doors is, what about, let's say you have a door, but you're having trouble with your bolt. You don't have a normal bolt. You know, the old-fashioned bolts where you have this big piece of wood that go over the thing and it'll be latched on, you know, that kind of bolt. So, v'chein neger, also a bolt. Sheyesh barosho, if at the head of the beam, there's a klustero. A klustero, it's a shape, it's a big, like, roundish shape at the end of the wood. It looks like a pomegranate or a ring or something like that to show that this is a utensil used as a bolt and it's not just a beam of wood. So what are they calling it? A bulb?
Bulb.
Okay, same idea. Shemochach asalav shukli muchen lila. It shows that this utensil is ready for locking up a door. Ve'eino karen, that's just a beam. Kishar kolakar, it's like other beams. So then no limba Shabbos, you can use that on Shabbos, because it's clear it's a functioning utensil of a bolt of a door. Okay, Yud, which just continues on with this. I don't think we did that last week, right? I don't remember.
We didn't do that.
So we didn't do tests. Okay, whatever. Yud. Neger, let's continue with the bolt, but this is not such a exceptional bolt as the last one. Shein barosho klustero. It doesn't have this bulb at the end. So is there another way that perhaps we can do something to make it look like it's part of this door? Sima yakosher v'tobos. What if it was tied up and suspended from the door? There was a rope connected to the bolt, and it's tied up to the door, as it were.
Or then, a hinge. There's a hinge that comes down.
I don't know if it's a hinge, it's a rope.
A lot of the bolts you see from the, especially the big doors that have the bolts that come.
Well, it says kosher. Kosher means tied. Okay. So it's tied and suspended to the door. Not only, but you could lock up the door with it. Or if it could be carried and its rope is with it. In other words, the bolt is off of the door, but it's connected to the rope that's connected to the wall. So there's still some kind of, even though it's not on the door at all, and it's on the ground, but there's a rope from the wall of the door that's connected to that. So that's also okay. But what if the rope is connected to the door, but the bolt was disconnected, slipped away? Then kemokar looks like any old beam. You put it in the corner of the room. You don't even have it near the door at all when the doors are not locked. And then go back and you lock it when you want to. You can't lock with such a thing. Why? Because you don't have any one of the two criteria. You don't have it, the legitimacy of a utensil because it doesn't have the bulb. It's not tied up. There's no rope at all connecting to that thing. So you don't have anything like that. So then it goes back to what? It looks like a beam that you're using to build and you can't do it. It's the same principle. You have to know, is it indicative of the way it's built that it is indeed a door or something connected with a door and a purpose of a door or not? And if it's not, then it looks like a regular beam, then we have to prohibit it because lest it look like one is building. Okay, next topic. Yudal. Menorah shechulios. A candelabra that is made of many parts that are connected. Bein gedola bein kedana, as a matter of fact, it's a big candelabra, a small candelabra. Now obviously, my friends, we're not talking about one that was lit on Shabbos. It was lit on Shabbos, be muktzah automatically. Talk about one that you haven't used this Shabbos. And it's very decorative. Still, ein metalklin, so you cannot carry it on Shabbos. Why can't you carry it on Shabbos? Shema yachsirenu b'Shabbos. Maybe you'll put it back together on Shabbos. So there's a line that's, you have to read in between the lines over here. What if that candelabra would fall? If it would fall, since it's made out of pieces, it would separate into many pieces. And what would happen if it separates into many pieces? What's the good likelihood will happen?
Put it together.
You'll put them back together. Assembly. You put it back together. That would be what, malacha?
Assembly.
Well, but or at least makabah patish, the final blow, where you're finalizing and putting the utensil together. So it appears that any utensil that's made out of a number of pieces, that if it would fall, it would break up into the smaller component pieces, and then there's the concern that the person would reattach the pieces together. So you can't carry it even if it is in the whole state because it's afraid that it could fall apart. I'm struggling to think of a contemporary case that fits into this. Maybe you guys can think of one. I just don't know one that...
why do you have to come on to that? Isn't it muksa any? What purpose,
no,
what
you
purpose
have,
is that?
You need to play.
It's a kalishim lachlis, so you could use for other things. L'tzarach gufa, l'tzarach makomo.
Paperweight.
If it's in the way, you can move it out of the way. What kind of utensil is it? If you haven't lit with it on Shabbos, what kind of malach? It's no different than a hammer. It's something to do with prohibited activities. So what's the rule of thumb to use prohibitive? If it's in the way, you can move it out. Right. And if you have some use for it, it's a nice decoration. You want to make the table look beautiful and you want to put this nice candelabra, even without candles, on the table. It's sterling silver face, I don't know. But if it could fall, it would break into pieces, but it's meant to be reassembled, not breaks into shattered pieces. So I don't know if there's anything
around. My family had a candelabra.
So yeah, but it's not going to fall into pieces.
Well, it comes apart.
But if it fell, it wouldn't happen because it's so well done. So it's got to be something that isn't so well done.
So we have a 3D puzzle of the Beit HaMikdash. So would that be the same idea where you couldn't move it because if it fell, you might put it back together?
Okay, but a puzzle's not a problem, is it?
Well, putting a puzzle together is a problem. Putting a puzzle together is a problem.
Even if you don't finish it?
You're making a picture. Matter. You're making a picture.
So that would be a good example. So if you got these 3D puzzles on the table, you shouldn't slide it around. Because if it falls, you might put it back together.
Even 2D, like just a jigsaw puzzle.
Okay, a 2D be the same thing.
A jigsaw puzzle.
If you had a candelabra that had pieces, even if you needed to place it, it was sitting on the table, you couldn't move it?
that is in many pieces, that if
it all comes apart. It's many pieces.
Again, you have to know the case. If it the kind that you have, if it falls, it will not fall into seven little pieces.
It's all welded together.
Even if you can unscrew it, but it's too hard to come apart.
Right.
I like your example of the 3D thing. Once that falls, boom, it's automatically into a lot of little pieces that can be reconnected very easily. So the type of candelabras that you have, we have one at home, the same thing. But you have to turn that for a long time till it comes apart. And if it falls, it will not break that way.
There are some that do come apart. They just sit on top. We have one.
Because otherwise, those Kiddush fountains would be a problem. Because they...
From Europe.
They can come apart. Now, you have to screw them so it's not...
These are more like they just are connected, and if we go like this, it would disconnect. That's the example I give. That's where the concern lies. So we're. I was looking through. I was trying to find a case.
A Lego
candlestick.
No, we have one. It's silver.
A Lego candlestick.
No screwing in.
You're kidding, right? So, okay, you have one that's just...
Well, in our family, you know, we have it from Europe.
Just connects, and could easily disconnect.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, then that.
Beautiful one. It's a beautiful
That is definitely a problem for adults.
No, for kids.
Okay, we're talking about if an adult wants to use it. Okay, now they go a step further now. What if, let's say you have a candelabra that is one piece, but it looks like it's made out of many pieces. How is that? What if it had grooves? And the grooves were such that it looks like where the groove is, that's where it was two pieces connected, even though that's not what it was. It's a what?
A fake out,
okay. In other words, it looks with all these grooves, looks as where it was connected, even though it wasn't. The nearest kebali chulis, it looks like it is of a number of pieces. If it's a very big one that's carried with two hands. You can't carry because of its heaviness. Now that's not what it really means, because we know already you can carry heavy utensils.
Yeah.
But the point is, if something even 10 people need to carry it, you can carry it. But since it's large, the large ones are usually the ones made out of multiple pieces. Those are the ones, because why do you need multiple pieces? If it's large, so it's not really because of its heavy, but it means since it's heavy, it probably has a lot of pieces. So if it was a pieced one, in other words, a heavy, large one that has grooves, looks like it has pieces, because those are the kinds that usually do come in pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But it was smaller, even with grooves, you can carry it because small ones, they never would make into pieces anyway. So it's a question of marasign, question of it looks, like you're carrying something you couldn't do. Uh-huh. Next, Yud Beis. Minon shal gabe ha'imum. In the olden days, if you had shoes, and you're making shoes, they made shoes on a special stand. And there was this block or whatever, and the shoe would go in there, and they'd formulate the leather over the shoe until the shoe was finished. So you got a finished shoe, on top of this, a shoe block. Okay? So, a shoe, shal gabe ha'imun, that's on the shoe block. So now the question is, you'd like to take the shoe off. Now what's going to happen if you take the shoe off?
Shape will change?
No. You will move the shoe block.
Yeah.
Because the shoe is on the shoe block. It's not likely,
tight,
and it's pretty tight on it. So it's pretty likely if you're going to want to take the shoe off the shoe block, you're going to remove the shoe block.
Dislodge.
Now the shoe block, is it muktzah? Right? It would appear to be a kli. It's a kli shemalach to lisser. A shoe block is a utensil.
Somebody's working on a shoe block with making a shoe. It's going to be pretty steady. That's pretty tight.
So now you want to take the shoe off. So what's going to
you're going to
no? If you're taking it off the shoe block, that shoe block's going to move. So it's on top of imum. So we still say shomtim al sober Shabbos. You can remove it on Shabbos, even though it's going to move. But why are you allowed to do it? So let's look. The shoe block is what kind of utensil?
A building.
What kind? Kli, shemalachto le'iser. Utensil is used for prohibited uses. The shoe is a kli shemalachto le'heter. So what's going to happen? You're going to take the shoe, you're going to take it off, and you're for sure going to move that shoe block. So why are you allowed to move the shoe block?
Because your intention is not to move the shoe block, is to take the shoe.
So just like we learned, you're allowed to move a kli shemalach to l'iser if it's in the way. Here it's for sure in the way, because you can't get to the shoe. So you're moving it only so you can get to the shoe. So it's no different than any type. We said those utensils that are used for prohibited activities, if it's in the way, you can move it away. So it's clear if my shoe is on top of it, and I want the shoe. Why can't I get the shoe? Because the shoe block's in the shoe. So I want to get that shoe block out of the shoe. So you're certainly allowed to do that. That's not a problem.
It doesn't sound the same. I hear it, but usually
it's exactly the same. Do you want it to move that utensil because you want to use the utensil?
No, that's for sure not.
Is the utensil in the way? It's in the way.
It's in the middle. I guess it's in the way.
So it's no different. What's the principle? I'm not moving it for its inherent use. I'm moving for the space it's taking up. So it's taking up space inside the shoe. So I don't want it being in the shoe. So I want to take it out. So you're allowed to move that out.
So if the shoe is on a shoehorn, like the thing.
So a shoehorn is
not a shoehorn, but the thing that keeps the shoe in its shape.
Shoe tree.
Shoe tree.
Shoe tree is on.
Can you take the shoe tree out?
Sure.
Why? So for sure.
Sounds like the same sort of thing, right?
I don't even know if the shoe tree would be.
Suggesting the form of the shape of the shoe.
I don't think that would be the same as the shoe.
Absorb the moisture.
Well, you're not allowed to put the shoe block in on Shabbos.
Shoe block or the shoe tree?
The shoe tree is not allowed to put into a shoe.
Can you take the shoe off the shoe tree?
So, but you could take it off.
The same reason.
At worst, it's a klisha malach d'lisser. At worst. And if it's taking up space, you can get rid of it. You can take it out. So if you can take it out.
We talked about this in Rambam.
I think you can't put it back in because then you're stretching it, no?
No, you're not stretching it.
I don't know. I'll have to look again.
I have
to check my memory on that.
It's probably in here. Sure.
No, what do you call it?
Shoe tree.
A shoe tree?
Let's see.
I always use
them.
You change the
shirt.
Yeah. Over time, though.
I think it's not in that. It's not in that?
No. It's only shoe shine brushes and broken shoes. Maybe in another book. All right, we'll have to look it up. Okay, where are we now? Next, machbesh, a clothes press, shel balabatim, of regular guys. I mean, homemade clothes presses. So they're not usually so professionally done. So let's say you've got a shirt inside the clothes press. You know, in the old days, they took two pieces of wood, bam, put it together. And that's how you kept the crease. So that was it. So now, can you open it up to get the shoes out, to get the pants out, right? Matirim, you can loosen it up to take the clothes out for the use of Shabbos. Have a little kosher, but you couldn't close them to put clothes in them to make them as a weekday activities. Again, even if it was a klisha malach d'lisser, again, you want to get it out of the place. You can get to the pants. We shall close him, but from those of the launderers, the professional guys, lo yigam, you can't touch their clothes presses, but for a different reason. Because that's muktzah, because it's very valuable, and they don't want to touch it for anything else. Remember, we said things that are very valuable, you don't want to be used at all, unless for the purpose they're designed for. So that is totally muktzah. And while we're on the topic of expensive items, what about unprocessed rolls of wool that are going to be used for very nice woolen uses? So you can't carry them because the owner is particular about them. Unprocessed wool, it's a very valuable commodity that he wants to save to make a nice sweater. And you're not going to carry it around and likely, you know, get it dirty. Lafiko, therefore, but unless you designate it for a specific situation, then mutarim, you'd be allowed to. In other words, if you said, I know this is unprocessed rolls of wool, but it's going to be a real hot night, a cold night tonight, and I want to be able to snuggle up in it because I have nothing else. And if you designate it before Shabbos, then you've said I want to use it, and that's fine. Vashlochim. What are shlochim? Shlochim are hides of animals that have not been processed yet. Now, usually, they're going to be used to be processed to make some beautiful leather skins, clothes, or whatever. But let's say you want to be able to sit on it today. So, muta l'taltalan, you're allowed to carry them. Bein shahayu shabalabais, oshom, doesn't matter if it was a homeowner's, or if it was a professional's. You're allowed to move that around, even if it's something you're going to plan on selling. But they're still not so particular about it. They're not so particular about the unprocessed hides as we are about unprocessed wool. I guess they can stand up to more abuse, and therefore the person's not particular about it. Next, Yudgimel. Cold over matunav, anything that is disgustingly dirty. Kigon ri'i v'ki v'tsoya, feces, vomit, and excrement. Okay, so anything else in that disgusting realm. If they're sitting in the courtyard, that you can imagine it's on your front patio. It's on your deck. Let's say, Shabbos afternoon, you like to take a sit on your deck, get a little sun, read a paper, Jewish paper, and it's on the deck, and there's some very unpleasant stuff right on the deck. So what do you do? Mutter, and you want to sit there, and it stinks. Mutter lot seal ash, you can take it out to the garbage. Ola basic Easter to the washroom. Why? So, Nico, this is called, in the Talmudic parlance, garaf shel rei, a chamber pot. In other words, you're allowed to remove it because it's disgusting.
Yeah,
right? Even though it's muktzah per se, but you're removing it because you can't use the environment that it is polluting, as it were. However, what if it was in an adjacent courtyard, or let's say at the end of the backyard? You can sit very nicely on the deck. You're not going to smell anything. Far away at the end of the yard, it's sitting there. Nobody really is over there. Still, what can you do? Cover the line clean. You could put a utensil to cover it. You can't carry it. It's not bothering you yet. So then why are you allowed to cover it? Yeah, because why? Because you have little kids who will venture forth, and you, if they can get into it, they will get into it. So therefore you cover it up so they don't get into it. Next, rok shalakarka. What about spittle that's on the ground? So, dorsal of ituma. You could step on it as you're just stop walking, in other words, you don't have to be worried. Oh, I'm spit. This may be muksa. There's no use for spit. But you know, if you're walking, you could step on it. It's not a problem.
This is outside or inside?
Doesn't matter.
Indoor.
Now, next case, an unusual case, and the commentators have a little trouble struggling to figure this out. Metaltalin kanuna. You can carry a kanuna. What's a kanuna? It's a utensil that you place coals in that are burning to keep yourself warm. The coals have now gone out. And what do you have left in the coals? You've got ashes. So this kanuna can be carried with the ashes. Mipnei efro. You can carry it because of the efro, because the ashes that are there. Now, what are you carrying it for? This is the problem. So Rashi and the commentators say, you're carrying it because you want to cover up the spit or excrement that may happen to be in your house. And there's nothing as good, I guess, as ash to cover it up. I don't know, but that's what he wants to do it for. So now, so good. So according to that, that's pretty straightforward. I guess they would, the ash is significant. In other words, it's something before Shabbos, you figure I would use this ash. This ash will be serving me a certain purpose. Even though there may be some broken pieces of wood inside this kanuna, and that is something that you don't need on Shabbos. So now here's where the problem is. How do you make sense of the next five words? Because then it's like a chamber pot. So I don't understand. How is it like a chamber pot? The ashes don't smell.
The wood
smells?
No, the wood is something you don't want.
But I don't know. It's like a graf shel rei. It's like a chamber pot. That's... So the Ravid learns a different shot, and it makes it a lot easier to do. He's saying, well, you've got ashes, you've got chips of wood. You're right, the chips of wood would be muktzah. We have a rule, if there's two things in one base, and one thing you want, the other thing you don't want, then you can do it for the thing you want. He wants the ashes. So it's kind of hard to understand that. Your English doesn't tell you much better either.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit hard to understand what the Rambam exactly means over here. And you know, if he wrote because you want to cover up a graf shel rei, that would make sense. You want to cover up some excrements. So you know, I guess I can't. Maybe he means it's like this: you could really remove it, but you don't want to remove it. It's yachi, and you don't have a way to remove it. Right? You have a way to cover it. So I guess he's saying covering it is no worse than moving it. And if I'm by covering it by taking the ash, I'm also taking some muktzah wood. You don't have to worry about the muktzah wood.
So he's saying it's no worse than taking the chamber pot out. It's taking the ashes and putting it on.
But okay.
Is there a distinction between the ash, which has a Shabbos purpose of covering the spit, but not the chips of wood, which don't have a Shabbos purpose?
That's right. So those really are muktzah, and they're both in the kanuna. So we're saying since the thing you want is more valuable for your use now, the ashes, then you can do that. Then he just throws in a rule that we've already learned. You don't initially make something into a disgusting thing on Shabbos that would require you to move it out. However, but if it happened, even though you transgressed and you did make it, but it is right now, so you could take it out. All right, let's do one more halacha. Yudal, it's long, but it's quick. It's a long lines, but it goes quickly. Yudal, shemen sheyetzi mitachas ha-kerish shel beis avad b'Shabbos. Oil that strips out from a board of a oil press. So I guess there was oil in the press, and then as Shabbos moved on, the liquid that was in there kind of leaks out. So v'chein t'marim u'shkedim u'muchan l'schara. And similarly, dates and almonds that were prepared for selling, and some oil flowed out of them. Mutar la'ochlam b'Shabbos. You can eat them on Shabbos. And what did I look up on the footnote over here? Even though it didn't come out of it before Shabbos, the Rambam's psak halacha is he says no lot things that come into being on Shabbos is mutter, and he says you're allowed to mutter la'ochlam b'Shabbos. You can eat that oil on Shabbos. Now he says a very interesting halacha. Remember we said if you put things away in a storage place for sale, they're generally considered muktzah. Let's say you go to Howard's warehouse, while his very expensive items are there, that he usually is for sale, right? Usually they're for selling and packing. What if on Shabbos says, oh, I know, I need some widgets, you know, for Shabbos. Oh, I have some in the storage warehouse. I'll walk over to his warehouse and I'll take them. They're muktzah because you've designated them for selling purposes and you weren't planning on using them on Shabbos. What about food that's designated for selling? So what, did you have any food in your warehouse? Not anymore. Anyway, what if you have a warehouse of grain or grain that's been piled up? Maskali, stop going to Shabbos. You can begin to take from it on Shabbos.
The difference with the wedding, with the cups and everything. If you go take them out of inventory and use them for the wedding.
Right, so usually you wouldn't be selling them. Usually you wouldn't be selling them. So here we're talking about food. So he says the following rule. You may take from the warehouse. Why? She'ein shum oichel shum muktzah b'Shabbos klal. There's no food at all that's muktzah on Shabbos. Even if it's designated for selling, it doesn't matter. Even if you weren't planning, because food is food. Food cannot be muktzah because it's always edible.
What if it's not kosher?
Well, that's another story.
But it's kosher frozen.
We'll have to talk about that because we're going to see in later halachas about, we'll talk about that. Ella hakol muchanu. It's all considered prepared because its existential state is for eating. So, what?
Even raw.
We're going to talk about it. It's all going to be talked about tomorrow. So food is not muktzah with one exception. Chutz mi grogros v'tzimukin sheba muktzah. Except for figs and raisins that you put in a special place to dry out. So when you take figs, you can eat them, but when you put them out in the sun to dry out, in the middle of the drying out process, they're disgusting. Now once they'll be fully dried out, then you can eat them again. So it's at that state where it's losing the food status for that period of time, that's bisman shemayabshim, so when you're drying them out, hoilu masruchas, since they get all yachi, bain time in the interim, vein meruchim, you can't eat them then. Then arena surim b'Shabbos surim muktzah. Then you can't have them on Shabbos because then that's been muktzah because you can't eat it on Shabbos. Similarly, next case chavi shenisgalso. Let's say a barrel that the top has been removed. There's a liquid in there, and it's been removed before Shabbos. Vavatir shenishbar, watermelon that's busted open. Now a closed watermelon is well protected, but now it's a busted up. So in both cases, we have to add one little thing. There are snakes all around over there. It's a place where snakes are found. So now there's a concern. Maybe the snake went over to the barrel and put a little poison in. Or went over to the watermelon and zapped a little poison in there. We don't know, but there's snakes around. So, even though you're not going to eat it, and you ask a shiloh, they're going to say you can't eat it. You can't drink it because a snake could have put it in it. And when there's sakana, is a danger, we're very strict. If you leave a barrel of wine overnight in a place where there's snakes, you're not allowed to drink the wine if it's open. Similarly with watermelon, can't. Right? So you really can't eat it. So are they muksa? No. You can take them and put them in a hidden place. Why?
taking away danger.
That's right. So nobody else will eat from it or drink from it and be in danger. So we always know for something, for a danger, you can move something that's mutza. Kiyotzeba, similarly, kamei an amulet, she'en amumcha, that has not been proven to work. Remember, we learned this a while ago. Are you allowed to carry such a thing on Shabbos? We said, l'chachili, you can carry an amulet that works. You can wear an amulet that works. But an amulet that's, we don't have any proof that it's a real amulet. We said in terms of Hilchas Shabbos and carrying, you can't carry it. But b'dieved, if you did, you don't have to bring a korban chatas. So what about moving it? So kamei she'en amumcha, an amulet that's not been proven to be effective. Even though you can't walk in the street with it, metalton also, you may move it because it has some type of utensil use. You could cover up a little cup or something with that. So therefore, you can carry it.
So it wouldn't be considered jewelry?
Well, I guess not. It's not. They're not so pretty. That's why you can't carry them on Shabbos. Right. You can't wear them. Mosar Hashem and Shabaner. What about leftover oil in your candle? The candelabra, you put a lot of oil in, it went halfway down, finished, went out, and I got leftovers. Can use that on Shabbos. Shabaner, u'shabakara. It's either in the candelabra or in a little plate, where you have the oil in a plate. Shehidliku behem ba'esh Shabbos, you lit it on that Shabbos. Also, stopping behind a Shabbos, you can't use from that even after it went out. Why? Because it's muksa, it was already designated for the prohibited use, and it was involved in prohibited use because the flick candle was flickering from that, and therefore even leftovers you cannot use on that Shabbos. I'll take your question.
Amen.
May the Lord bless you.